Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Michael Jonas will be with us for the first half hour, and Brad Coates for the second half hour. Both of my guests and I will be discussing romance as we ramp up to Valentine's Day. You know, I really want to focus in on emotional and physical intimacy because in my 34 years of doing psychotherapy, I have found that most people really want both. You know, if you have emotional intimacy, then you can have more physical intimacy, but it is a positive feedback loop. And Michael Jonas, who is back, he was here 2 weeks ago. Welcome to the program, Michael.
Well, you know, bad pennies keep turning up.
Oh, you're a good penny, and you are such a creative guy. I heard that quite a number of our listeners took advantage of the free download, which we'll offer again if they go to.
They did.
Yeah.
We were pleased, and what can I tell you? It's just it's nice to be able to offer your listeners something that will be fun to play on Valentine's or any time.
So they need to go to your website, timefortwo.com, and they will see a shopping cart. And go on, Michael, about
it. It's a free downloadable game. There are two downloadable games there. One is called Make a Date, which is a conversation game, a dating game. The other is called Romantic Interlude, and it is, as its title suggests, a romantic interlude. It's intimate and playful, and they can select either one, and when they check out, if they put in the code Wiley, W-I-L-E-Y, capital W, there's no charge for the game.
Yes, and it's a wonderful game. Michael, for the many, many years I've known you, I've been impressed with your creativity. I'm looking at your Make a Date, which I took advantage of and with the free download, even though I own your games, and I think they're wonderful, and I recommend them to my clients all the time, especially Enchanting Evening. But the objective of Make a Date, the downloadable one, is for two players to have fun together, discovering and sharing each other's interests, experiences, wishes, and preferences. Do you find the quotes and come up with the questions? What's the process?
Well, it's actually kind of interesting. We got into we developed a game many years ago that was an award-winning game called To Know You Better, which was board game. It took us a year to write it, and we thought it would be nice to be able to offer something a little bit less elaborate that could be downloaded, printed, and played as soon as it's purchased rather than shipped. It'd be basically a single-play experience, but it'd be much less expensive. So we went back to the original game and pulled out and rewrote and made more current questions and content and so forth. The quotes are simply the result of, to be honest with you, a lot of research. And the idea was to use the quotes from various sources as a way of kind of setting the stage for each question. So the questions don't seem harsh or direct. They're softer and contextual. The other thing that we did was we made sure we stayed away from politics and religion, and the game is not explicitly sexual. And the idea, again, was to give people permission to talk about themselves in a game format about things that they enjoy, reminiscence, things they are looking forward to, the things they might want to experience. the interesting part about this whole dating conversation game process is that we found a large number of boomers and people that are now called empty nesters. The kids are gone. That whole relationship now has changed. And in many cases, the game, either to make a date or to know you better, is a chance for people to really rediscover each other in their new relationship, the new part of their old relationship, I guess you'd call it.
Sure. I talk about how, ideally, the empty nest should become the love nest. And I think your games will facilitate that immensely so that the children are gone, they can, as you say, rediscover, reinvent themselves. And your questions are really wonderful for doing that and getting people to talk and also to touch. And that's what we long for. More talking, more touching.
Yeah, one of the at our website, one of the phrases we've been using, because it's so we're such victims of our times, but we've been saying texting and tweeting is not touching and talking. And so
Isn't that the truth?
Old-fashioned conversation, intimate, playful, entertaining experiences.
And, texting, you know, and tweeting is not talking. Amen.
So texting and tweeting is not touching and talking.
Touching and talking. Want to get that down. Yes. It's really, really true.
Well, you remember when we spoke before a couple of weeks ago,
right.
I had mentioned to you about a friend of ours who's a psychiatrist and whose comment on the continuous connectivity of people and the intrusion of smart devices and smartphones and what have you is, you know, everybody wants to be somewhere else other than where they are.
Mm-hmm.
And that a
mm-hmm.
phone call coming in is obviously going to be more important than the conversation you're in, so you take the phone call. It's a really interesting way to separate yourself in, in my opinion, cut off communication. So what we wanted to do with our games is get people to turn off the television, turn off the smart devices, turn on the candlelight and soft music and comfortable clothing, all the things that this couple find romantic and pleasurable, and then focus on just that part of the experience.
It's so needed. It is so needed. And, of course, when people go to their devices, making it seemingly a priority to the person they're with, it's rude, and it does send a message. And you and I are an older generation because can't imagine doing that when we were young and romancing somebody, right?
Oh,
or
my
courting somebody. No.
Well, when you're with someone, well, it reminds me, if you remember the line from the Crosby, Stills, and Nash song, you know, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with.
Yes,
At least love and be connected to somebody without being connected to the universe at large at the same time.
I think a lot of younger people are missing out big time. And they simply have to put away their devices when they're with somebody. And, now, your questions in... Well, there's even a quote from you, but mostly there are other quotes. But I like the quote from you.
Ego runs amok.
Oh, no, you've got a well-managed ego. I mean, you're creative and bright, and you've made these... You and your wife, Barbara, have made these really successful games. And you, question number 22 is, the shortest distance between two points is the road you should have taken. And that's you talking. And then you ask, the mode of travel that's most likely to appeal to me is space shuttle, horse-drawn carriage, hot air balloon, electric car, anything chauffeured. What do you think I would answer? Because you know me pretty well.
Electric car.
Nope.
No?
Anything chauffeured.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought you might want your audience to see you as a more humble person.
Oh, well, I do, but There is a part of me that is high maintenance, but the rest of me is very down to earth.
Okay.
You know, well, I like a chauffeured car because then you can make out in the back and have some fun.
Absolutely.
That's another reason I like a chauffeured car.
Well, without getting into the details, that is an experience Barbara and I have shared.
Yes.
Maybe not as completely intimate as one would have liked, but the whole idea was we did this in New York in a limousine that we had access to in New York, and it was very exciting just to be out and in the city and in some place different for us. And that's one of the things that we talk about, and one of the things that the games help generate is that sense of doing something out of the ordinary. You know, this whole notion of turning off the world and turning each other on is, I think, really compelling. And one of the ways to help make that happen is break routines, do something different or do something the same, but in a different way or a different place. And yes, fantasies like, you know, making out in a limousine are wonderful to experience.
Yeah, and physiologically what happens is the brain produces more dopamine, the hormone of arousal, whenever you're experiencing something that's novel. You need some novelty to get more dopamine.
Well, so, I'm not sure. Where else can you get it?
That reminds me of I think I know how you'd answer question 36, and you quote, in this case, Benjamin Franklin, we are a tool-making animal, and your question is, which tool do you think I find essential for my daily activities? Thick skin, a sense of humor, my first cup of coffee, and acid tablets, stamina, and I'm going to say, for you, it's a sense of humor.
Absolutely. I am a major believer in if you don't laugh, you would start crying. And
yeah.
I can say that because Barbara and I live in Arizona, and if anybody listening knows anything about Arizona politics, there's much to cry about here.
Okay. Yeah, but even your games don't go into politics, so we won't right now either.
Okay.
But I hear you about the sense of humor. you know, so many of the questions on this free downloadable, Make a Date, a Conversation for Two, and the other one that they can download is...
Romantic Interlude.
Romantic Interludes. And, but it just, it does inspire so much discussion, and you have a Jane Austen quote here, think about the past only as its remembrances give you pleasure. And then you ask, describe a childhood memory that makes you smile. You know, I think that's a wonderful, you know, I'm going to actually use that in my therapy, especially in the first session when I'm gathering information, because, of course, people that come to see me often have some difficult childhoods, but maybe there is a childhood memory that makes them smile, and we want to see if there's enough of a foundation here, not only from the childhood, but from the couple's relationship to build on.
Well, it's interesting that you picked that question, because we have some friends that we shared the game, well, To Know You Better, which also has the same question Make a Date has. We shared this with friends. He is a internationally known public speaker. She has a very successful business career. They're very busy. They're out in the world. Their time is precious for them. And
mm-hmm.
So we gave them the game, and we got a call from her, and they obviously will remain nameless, but she said when he read that question,
mm-hmm.
he started describing for her a treehouse that he had as a little boy.
Mm.
And as he describes it, She's looking at him, and she is seeing him as the little boy.
Yeah.
He had so much wonderful, positive energy around that experience. She said it radiated just sitting there and talking with her.
Well, that reminds me, this is a pretty good segue into something that I believe very much, that the truly sexy woman evokes, no, not an image of herself in the mirror, but an image of the man she stimulates as a laughing boy. So then he's able to love her for the way she makes him feel.
I think it may be true in both directions.
The laughing kid.
Well, I think it's an aphrodisiac. I think it's an aphrodisiac to be seen by someone in a romantic, intimate way who finds you attractive and appealing. It is truly an aphrodisiac. And then the idea is in our very congested, very busy lives to stop and let your partner know that's how you see him or her.
Say the words.
Say the words. Leave a post-it note. Give them an unexpected kiss. There are myriad ways in which you can communicate with your partner how attractive he or she is and how romantic he or she is. And it doesn't have to be elaborate. Barbara and I, in our Facebook, Twitter, and in our blog, posting right now, we're doing something from our book of love, laughter, and romance called 7 Steps to a Perfect Night of Passion. And
say more about that, because this is perfect for Valentine's Day.
Exactly.
Or any day, but yeah.
And that's the idea. The idea is it's different, it's situational, it's inviting, and it does show that the one is concerned, caring, attracted, sexually interested in their partner, because this is what they're willing to do to make that romance happen.
Mm-hmm. And so this is on your blog.
If people go to facebook.com/timefortwo or twitter.com/timefortwo, spelled out, TIMEFORTWO, there's those postings, and Barbara's posting. She actually does more of the Twitter and Facebook than I do, but she's posting these 7 steps over the next 7 days.
Oh, good. All right. So we're letting you know, listening audience, so you can go and get some great, great inspiration for Valentine's Day. I know you get testimonials and have for over 30 years. And you also, on your website, you have all the media testimonials as well. And I like what Men's Fitness said with these boudoir contests, and they put contests in quote, the loser can be the winner, and vice versa, said one tester who refused to return the game when the test was over. This game really helped us appreciate taking time to explore each other. And time these days is so precious, and we need to set aside the time, and your games do that so well. Tell us about, you have agreements with a lot of hotels for a Valentine's Day package that includes your enchanting evening. What else?
We have been for years working with hotels that include and B&Bs, breakfast, bed and breakfast.
Sure.
Who include a copy of An Enchanting Evening in their romance getaway packages.
Yeah.
And we're in the process now of redoing or rebuilding our website so that we can include a searchable database that will take people to romantic getaway packages in their area. So that's you know, I'm a little ahead of the curve because we haven't completed that process yet.
Yeah.
But yes, there, and you can do it on your own. I mean,
yes,
couples don't have to go to, they can put their own package together and check into a local hotel. You know, the staycations now, where you don't have to, you can break the routine and get away for a weekend, and it's as if you've traveled a long distance because you've changed your milieu and you take a game with you and champagne or whatever you drink and go have yourself a romantic time. You know, no one's going to call you, turn off your cell phones, and you're in your own island. But hotels have been doing this. It's an alternative to the golf package, theater package, shopping package. This is the package.
I think a very good one. I am often suggesting to couples that I see that the staycation idea that, and you know, you go, if you go online, there are a lot of these local places that give you quite a good deal. And,
well, yes, especially seasonally, you know,
yeah.
In Arizona in the summer, some of the, you know, the world-class resorts just offer incredible inducements for, you know, weekend packages because they, you know, they need to keep their staff busy. And yes, you need, people need to just pay attention to what's going on in their community, what hotels are doing, what promotions, and take advantage of it.
Right. And of course, you do have air conditioning in Arizona. So once
you're
inside.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And that may encourage the couple to stay inside and sip their champagne and play Enchanting Evening and have some fun.
Yeah, they can turn up the heat on their relationship without having to turn down the thermostat.
There you go. Yeah, it's so important. I've been saying for years that if, especially couples with smaller, medium-sized children, that they really have to get away and remember that they are husband and wife, not just mother and father, you know, and to have that prime time together where they really focus in on each other.
Well, the advantage of doing something locally, you know, mm-hmm. you don't have the expense and the
travel
need for extensive preparation for long travel.
Yeah.
And truly, you go to a hotel that you might not otherwise have gone to, you get away to a bed and breakfast, and you've made arrangements, if you have children, for the children to be attended to, and it's your time. It's time for the adults to reconnect.
And, yeah, I think it is essential. It really is essential for couples to talk to each other again and not to talk. Of course, you know, a version of that I suggest for a number of my couples is that they have a date night twice a month and then they take turns planning the date night, and whoever's turn it was to plan the date night with some surprises for the mate, because surprises are always fun, but whosoever turn it is to plan the date night, then they also are in charge of initiating sex later. You know, no matter what kind of sex. I don't necessarily mean intercourse, but whatever kind of sex that they would like to do.
I like that idea.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems to work.
Barbara and I do it. We've been having date nights. Some are intimate. Some are just conversational. Some are just make sure nobody intrudes on our space. But yes, I think it's really critical and may actually make the date. Put it down on the calendar.
Yes.
Anticipate that it's going to be your private time. One of the things that you can do with date nights is what Barbara and I like to call mystery dates, where one party, as you suggested, is responsible for creating the date night content, but doesn't necessarily tell the partner what that content is. So they
right.
get to have the fun of putting it together, and the receiving partner gets to enjoy the mystery and the anticipation.
All of this is so important to keeping that spark going in a long-term relationship. Or even a shorter-term relationship. But now, what going back to your games,
yes,
some
ma'am.
Encourage talking and some encourage kissing. There's a lot of you have a lot of kiss questions in your time for two games. And, you know, I think it's really true that a lot of women I've seen in some research indicates this, that about 3 out of 4 women think kissing is more intimate than having sex. I think that's an old statistic because I don't. But anyway, kissing activates primal urges. It's a very primitive need. So I like some of your kissing questions. I like them all.
Yeah,
I like all.
Yeah, because for some people it can be light and playful, and you know, reminds people of their early experiences with their, you know, with another boy or with another girl, or you know, and for some people, you know, it's a deeper and more intimate experience. There's all kinds of kisses. That's one of the things that's fun about the whole idea of kissing, is the variety of them that are out there.
I used your game one time. Well, I've used it a number of times. But one time I was presenting a workshop for couples over 40. This was some years ago in Las Vegas. And I had your game there. And I asked one of the couples to come up and demonstrate one of your suggestions and one of the cards, which was to give your partner a matinee kiss. And boy, did this couple, you know, he threw her back and then just kissed her so romantically. It was just great.
Change,
and everybody in the
Douglas Fairbank.
Yeah. Everybody just loved it. You have another question on the downloadable one, and I'll put all of this in my write-up so people listening can do this. A movie is life with the dull parts cut out, and that's Alfred Hitchcock. And so the question that you ask here is, what movie did you recently enjoy and what did you like about it? Now, I use that sometimes. If I send a couple to a movie, I'll use it in therapy.
Okay.
You know, and we'll talk about what they identified with and maybe what they would wish for. I mean, it can be movie therapy, but for any couple reading this question, it can open up all sorts of avenues of discussion. What movie did you recently enjoy and what did you like about it?
Yeah, well, you know, it gives people, again, a chance to talk about their own personal response. It invites a response from their partner.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when someone says, I enjoyed something, and then their partner says, what do you enjoy about it? Or
mm-hmm.
they hear that, and that then mm-hmm. becomes part of their their arsenal of things they can then share. So
yes.
If Barbara tells me, for example, that she enjoyed a particular kind of movie, I know if I suggest something similar, I know what kind of response I'm very likely to get.
You're very thoughtful, Michael.
Yeah.
You really are. I bet you and Barbara personally enjoy Valentine's Day, but I suspect that you have kind of a celebratory romantic time other than Valentine's Day, because years ago, People magazine voted you the most romantic couple in the United States.
Well,
you preach.
It was a Valentine's issue, and
mm-hmm.
there were several couples in different stages and different locales, and Barbara and I were living in San Francisco at the time, and yes, People magazine did do that. We jokingly would tell people that Abe Lincoln was right. You can fool some of the people some of the time.
Well, I sure do appreciate this half hour that you've been able to give us. And do you have one final thing you'd like to say to the listening audience other than...
Only to remind them to go to timefortwo.com.
Yeah. Yeah.
The downloadable games, pick one or the other, and when they check out, simply put in capital W-I-L-E-Y as the code, and the game is free.
And the game is free, and I'm so glad that some of our listeners took advantage of that 2 weeks ago when you were on. And listen, listeners, some of you will be hearing this in an archived version, but do this. I mean, it's free, and it's going to stimulate a lot of discussion. And then when you have more emotional intimacy because of this, that's going to no doubt lead to more physical intimacy, and that's what we like, the whole lot.
I love it.
Yeah. So thank you again. Thank you. We'll have you back soon.
Have a wonderful Valentine.
Thank you. Thank you. And I hope you and Barbara do, too. So
we plan on doing just that.
Good. Thanks again, Michael.
Bye-bye.
And bye-bye. So now we're going to switch, and I think that our dear, dear producer can make that happen so that Brad Coates can come online with us. Let's see if that's going to happen.
It has happened. Brad Coates is online.
I'm so glad to talk to you, Bradley. You know, Michael Jonas, I've known perhaps a little longer than you, but back in the days when I lived in Hawaii, you were on my show a number of times then, and you've been on this show a number of times, and you're my buddy. We're just so happy to have you. Brad Coates is the author of Divorce with Decency, but he's a very unique lawyer because even though his big firm in Honolulu, Hawaii, does a lot of divorces, Brad talks about how to make relationships last, and Brad knows how to spice up a relationship, don't you, Brad?
Yeah, I'm probably not quite as rich and famous as Michael Jonas, it doesn't sound like, and nobody's ever accused me of being the most romantic guy in America, but I've done my best with my wife, Sachi, and I've certainly done the best with my many, many clients that come through, oftentimes right on the edge of getting divorced, and I've been pretty successful at talking a lot of them out of it, which is bad for business, but probably good for my karma. So it's been an interesting.
Very
I've
good.
Been a divorce lawyer for almost 40 years now, and we run the biggest divorce firm in Hawaii. I've probably done some like 35,000, no, maybe not that many, 30,000 divorces over that period of time, and saved a lot of marriages as well. So that's like I say, that's the better side of my profession.
Of course it is, and I'm aware of a certain referred some of your people to me over the years.
I have indeed.
You know, it's a little harder now that I'm in Seattle and you're in Hawaii, but you've referred a couple of women who were talked out of divorce by you, so they want to make their relationship better. I'm wondering how you would respond to this. You know, I'm always saying to people, make time for sex, go away together, and I think sometimes adultery or infidelity is just the desire to have a place where no one wants anything of you but pleasure. And you don't have to answer the phone or go on social media or answer emails.
Attend the PTA meetings on behalf of the kids. I think
right.
I think the need for novelty is a lot of what, and just a different place to cocoon up and maybe get whatever's missing in the marriage. I see that all the time.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily a great idea to leave your spouse for whoever you're having an affair with, because that the statistics on that are pretty hideous too. So
yes, and all of this is spelled out very completely in your excellent book now. Is the fifth edition out yet?
The fourth edition is out now, and the fifth edition is coming out this year for UH Press. I just talked to the publisher.
Oh, good. So Divorce with Decency, and it's...
Number five, yeah.
Number five. So that means you've sold a lot of books, and I refer your book to lots of my couples, and it's been very helpful. I mean, really, you have created a lot of karma with talking people out of divorces and then writing this really good book that helps people keep their relationships together.
Well, let's hope, because I'm sure I've got a few areas where my karma's not quite as good. But, you know, definitely if you can do what you can to keep relationships together. I mean, it's not too much of an overstatement to call the way we do our divorce with decency practice here is, you know, trying to be righteous in the way of we handle these cases. You know, so many, and this is something you got to be very careful about if you're on the edge of divorce and go talk to a divorce lawyer. Most divorce lawyers will just prod you right into it and then take forever to finish it and charge you a bunch of money. So if people who are getting divorced need to know that there are other alternatives where they can sort of control their own case and do it a little more humanely, or maybe not do it at all. There's a lot of other elements to assess rather than just, you know, letting yourself become cannon fodder for some divorce lawyer who's trying to put his kids through school on your based upon your legal fees.
Well, indeed, and there is even one lawyer with divorce mediation, and that can help, or doing your own divorce. I know some people that have done that. I guess there's online stuff. But I think reading your book first will help lots and lots of couples who are contemplating this. So, you know, I've talked earlier in the program about intimacy, and, well, I haven't used the word intimacy so much, but so many people are touch deprived, and I think touch deprivation plays a key role in the development of marital and sexual problems. People just aren't touched enough. A lot of people are touch starved. Don't you hear that in your practice?
Well, touch starved, and in listening to part of what you were talking about with Michael Jonas, and I checked out his website online. I haven't played any of those games per se, but you know, they one of the biggest problems. It's interesting, something like 75% of all working women and even a higher percentage of non-working women identify the biggest failing of their husbands and boyfriends as a reluctance to talk. So,
yeah,
you know, if you can just get anything going that brings communication online, that is huge. And then if you can add in the physical dimension, that's tremendous too. But his seemed to focus on at least getting people communicating in a much more, you know, kind of a interesting way, a fun way, sexy way maybe, and then probably sexy communication might lead to the sexuality per se. So, I'm all in favor of that.
I am too. And as I said at the top of the show, we would be focusing in this program on emotional and physical intimacy, because if you have emotional intimacy where you are talking, where you are able to be vulnerable, where you do trust, where you can be open, you're much more likely to have the physical intimacy. Because think of all the women that you've known, professionally at least, in terms of your work. Let's see how I put
this. Glad you clarified that, yeah.
Yeah, I know. they'll say in one way or another, the woman will say, make love to me in my ear. I need to hear the words. I need to hear the words. And as you said already, a lot of the women say that my man won't talk to me. Of course, in Hawaii.
You're the expert on the physical act of intercourse. But the biggest problem is, you know, for guys, intercourse is a, you know, lickety split, you know, 4-minute deal where it's just, you just consummate it and explode and move on to something else, have a cigarette or whatever. For women, you know, 18 to 20 minutes of foreplay alone is what they need. So the whole concept of how men and women relate physically is skewed, and guys need to be made aware of that.
Yes, they do. And to talk about the emotional intimacy, I think that responsiveness is really, really important. There are a lot of studies that have to do with that. It's about being responsive to your partner's emotions, listening, responsiveness to, it helps the partner feel that the relationship is fair if somebody is responsive. And fairness is, well, I think fairness has one critical element, and that is respect. You know, if we have more respect if we feel like the relationship is fair. So responsiveness.
Problem that I see in a lot of my practice And, you know, I don't know if your listeners know this, but, you know, probably two-thirds of all divorces are filed by women. It's the wahines, which is Hawaiian for women, that, you know, get the most upset the most often. They have higher expectations. I mean, guys settle into a you know, sort of a status quo kind of a marriage, and you know, as long as they're getting three meals a day and get to sit in their lazy boy lounger watching, you know, ESPN, you know, they think that's a good marriage. And wives are wanting substantially more. So there's a couple of tips that I have on, you know, I mean, this is not nearly as profound probably as Michael Jonas's games, but, you know, just tips on how to have an ideal relationship from right out of my Divorce with Decency book are just basic stuff. Take walks together. You know, 30 minutes a day just walking, and then, of course, if you're walking, you're talking and observing stuff as you walk. And, again, it just gets communication going. Give each other gifts often, you know, small things. Doesn't have to be, you know, anything lavish. You don't have to give them a diamond a week. But, you know, little surprises, flowers, surprise kind of gifts, writing love notes, hiding them around the home, you know, in the underwear drawers or secret places. You know, all of that stuff, just even saying I love you daily many, many times a day makes all the difference as far as keeping a relationship communicative and somewhat hot. And, you know, if you get into, it's not just in marriages, but in any kind of roommate relationship, you get into patterns. You know, you walk in the door, one person, you know, gets a drink, somebody else, you know, watches TV, somebody else, you know, fires up a joint, somebody else, you know, takes a nap, somebody, you know, I mean, everybody has their own patterns. Somebody comes home and goes right back out the door and goes and exercises. But trying to synchronize those patterns to where you can have as much of it overlapping as possible, I think is huge. And, you know, I mean, both go exercise or both smoke a joint or both do whatever you're going to do, to try and do it, in sync rather than each person just falling into their daily routine patterns and only overlapping, you know, just almost by accident. You've got to make your overlap on purpose.
Very important. What you're talking about is that, in part, is the transition from being in the work mode to being at home, where hopefully you're more in R&R mode. So I suggest to some of my couples that they have a 7-second kiss and a 15-second hug. And that's long enough to get the oxytocin going. And then after they greet each other with this good kiss and this good hug, they can go their separate ways and transition, like maybe one does watch the news, the other takes a run, whatever. But then you come back having greeted each other that way. It's better. It's usually better. It sets the tone for the rest of the evening.
Even little stuff like, you know, when you're, you know, especially with both spouses working. So, you know, nowadays, you know, the women are working as much or more as the men, and everybody's exhausted after their day at work. And so, you know, just like I say, everybody probably would just as soon come home and veg out. But if you just go straight to the veg mode without at least paying some attention to your partner, then like I say, that sets this sort of pattern where everybody's just doing their own thing and you're not doing enough of our thing together. So even just, you know, whoever's home first, instead of just, you know, going straight to the tube and, you know, and becoming transfixed, you know, shut it off when your spouse comes home and go to the door and meet him or her and you know, talk about their day and, you know, and spend a few minutes, you know, before you switch the TV back on, spend a few minutes, you know, talking to each other. It's amazing what a difference that makes.
Absolutely. And lots of couples don't do that because they're really not paying attention. You know,
or they're just exhausted. I'm sure nobody's doing it to deliberately be insulting.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, like I say, you get everybody's tired and exhausted, and it's so easy to just, you know, fall into your, you know, lazy boy lounger, and the next thing you know, when's dinner, and that becomes the extent of your communication with your spouse. That's probably not the best approach.
Probably not. But in terms of Valentine's Day, I think, going back to my pay attention to the attention he or she pays to you. And that's actually where the focus of some of the time for two games can really help, because it helps the couple focus in on each other and make time for each other. And there are some other things that you can do in, under the heading of kindness. And this is especially true for men, and I know you have an opinion about this. Don't try to fix it. Do try to understand it. A lot of guys want to fix it right away.
That's the male trait. I mean, you know, all the experts in the field talk about how, you know, women just want to sort of talk, you know, even around issues and just sort of discuss them. I mean, it becomes a part of communicating, themselves, whereas guys are immediately looking just to go straight to the cut to the chase, let's resolve it kind of things. And, you know, for a lot of these things, it's not about resolution. It's about understanding, you know, why she feels it's a problem. And that's, you know, that's notorious difference between men and women.
Yeah, and don't you feel like in your growth as a man, in your personal growth, that it took a while to really get that? I mean, I bet in your 20s you didn't really understand that as well.
Yeah.
Or maybe you did. Maybe you were really evolved.
No. I think actually, ironically, my career as a divorce lawyer has actually probably made my marriage stronger, which is kind of funny to say. But, I mean, you watch everybody else's problems come through your door, and you begin to realize that maybe your own are not quite so serious after all. Plus, you learn some of these skills, and it's a skill set. I mean, sex is a skill set, with you as the teacher, I guess. But, you know, communication is a skill set. It's all, you know, I mean, and certainly, John Teal behavior between spouses is definitely a skill set. And like I say, you'd have to have watched as many other people's relationships, you know, collapse as I have, and not learn a few clues on your own, you'd have to be blind. So I think actually it has proved to be an interesting profession. And it's helped me to be a little more understanding of, you know, funny little things like, we've talked about this before, you know, that Dr. Barbara and Alan Pease and their Why Men Don't Listen and Women Can't Read Maps. I mean, it really, we are two different species. And with the guys wanting to fix it, go right to the map, find the right route, but not listening to what women are really saying. Their book, they talk about stuff about how guys have got to learn to, you know, set the environment, the right lighting, the right mood, the right music, even a dinner is an intimate event, lighting a fire. I've got a cabin up in the mountains, and man, it's amazing the difference. You know, Hawaii, we don't light a lot of fires. There's not a lot of need for heat in Hawaii, but when I go up into the mountains, you know, it's like you're heading back to your caveman days, lighting the fire and sitting beside it with a glass of wine. I mean, you know, it almost immediately puts you in a different zone.
Of course. Yeah, you've learned all of these things. There is actually, when you speak of that, I can relate, because I think doing couples counseling for so many years has made me also aware of the pitfalls, the downfalls, and being specializing as a sex therapist. It's helped me. I mean, you're right. Sex is a skill set. Just to go off the track for a moment, but I'm reminded of it. Somebody did a study of, it wasn't a huge study, but interviewing sex therapists, and the question was, do sex therapists have better sex lives than others? Well, it turns out they do, because they can do it. They can have sex without anxiety because they have so much knowledge. So that harkens back to your skill set. You know, my library is filled with books about sexuality, and I'm constantly learning, and I practice what I preach, and Brian is very happy about that.
Practice what you preach. Well, but, you know, I mean, it's kind of I don't know if it's a generational thing, or maybe it just goes through all generations, but, I mean, you know, certainly, you know, my father never taught me a single thing about sex. I mean, it was never spoken. I mean, I've had some of my friends whose parents were, you know, fairly, you know, explicit about trying to explain it. But, you know, probably more people grew up the way I did, where I never got any, even a clue from my father about how to put what where, or how long to take doing it, or, you know, any of this other stuff that it kind of turns out to be a useful skill when you're having sex. And it's not talked about. It's really not even talked about between the couples. I mean, how many couples have you had, Dr. Diana, where, you know, the issue probably could have been resolved if, you know, if she would have just told him what makes her feel good, or him, you know, him saying, hey, you've got to kiss me here or whatever. And you know, until they get to a third party where they can actually sort of even talk about it with a, you know, a sex therapist, they don't say it to one another, whereas then probably be a lot cleaner communication if they would just, you know, verbalize it to one another. But it's hard for people to talk about, even people who've been together for a long time.
I know. This is sort of
I'm not
a joke,
trying to put sex therapists out of business, but yeah.
No, you would never do that. No, I have job security in my profession, as you do, actually. But it's supposed to be a little bit of a funny, but what's the four-letter word that if only more couples did it, they'd be so much happier? And indeed, it's not F-U-C-K, it's T-A-L-K.
T-A-L-K, yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, because a lot of people just, they're embarrassed to talk, they don't have the vocabulary, they just really, really have some difficulties talking about sex and showing appreciation and
well, I guess that's where Michael Jonas and his games come in so handy. I mean, you can't play those games and not be talking.
Exactly.
You know, the reviews on these things are amazing. I was reading some of these testimonials about how popular the Time for Two game is, the Enchanting Evening. You know, I mean, these people are loving this stuff. It's like I say, it's not rocket science. You know, it may have been for him to put the games together, but you know, I mean, just literally, you know, pulling out, you know, playing charades or pulling out any board game probably gets people talking. Just really sitting down and focusing on one another. And you know, this is going to, unfortunately, I think, it's going to ripple through society as more and more people grow up focusing only on their phones, and you know, not even on who they're with in any context, much less their actual mate or, you know, or physical love. You know, there's a real problem when you get people interrupting intercourse to go answer their phone,
and we
could be headed that direction because people are so hardwired in a whole different direction nowadays. So
I don't know if you were listening during this part, but toward the beginning of the program, Michael Jonas said, texting and tweeting is not touching and talking. And
I did not hear that, but that's exactly right. That is exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Think about where we're headed with all this, how many people I can get to like me on Facebook, or how many people, you know, I mean, it's really kind of a self-absorbed culture. You know, it's all about me, and relationships are, I hate to break it to people, but it ain't all about you. It's about you and your partner. And really, we could be sending a lot of people down the wrong path with this with this approach that we've got now, where everybody's so self-absorbed.
Well, it's narcissism is pretty difficult when in relationships. Especially when one person is pretty narcissistic and the other isn't, and it really undermines communication, and it makes for resentment, and it makes for anger, and it makes for all kinds of things. If both people are narcissistic, I tend to not see them. They're kind of, they go along in their ways, but they often don't have deeply intimate relationships because they don't have the capacity for it. They're too self-involved. They don't have enough empathy or compassion, which is essential, right?
It's a key skill in any, you know, just communication skills. You know, verbal personal communication skills are potentially being sacrificed in exchange for, you know, texting and tweeting. And, you know, that's what passes for communication nowadays. You know, you try to get these young kids to come off of their joysticks and their video games to have a conversation. You know, I mean, when I grew up, you know, I was told, you know, here's how adults talk at the dinner tables. You know, sit down. We're going to have these following discussions. And, you know, that's unheard of anymore.
You know, you were very fortunate, and I was too. We would have family dinners with candlelight, and my sister and I, even as young girls, were expected to have really good manners, and if we didn't, we were excused from the table. So,
and be just clever conversationalists. I mean, my family mm-hmm. used to deliberately bring up sort of, you know, controversial topics so you could talk about the, you know, the issues of the day, or talk about literature, talk about, you know, I mean, that was probably where I got a lot of my bearings in life. But nowadays, sure. You sit at a dinner table and 3 out of 4 people have got their phones out.
Yeah, no, it's really unfortunate. So your father may not have been the best sex educator, but it sounds like your dad and probably your mother were really good at getting you and, let's see, you had a sibling.
Yeah, I've got a sister.
Sister.
My dad did teach me one good thing about relationships that I will pass along to your audience.
Yes.
He said, if you ever wind up ending a relationship with a woman, always have it be your fault. always put her in the position of having been the one to call the shots, and you take the fall for having been a jerk in the relationship. Don't ever, you know, so many people like to lash out, the reason why we're breaking up is because you're fat and ugly and not sexy anymore or whatever. You know, don't ever do that. There's no need. If you're going to break up in a civilized fashion and swallow hard and stand the jerk for it yourself rather than, being actively accusing your partner of stuff. That's so stupid.
And that resonates in your book, those sorts of messages, time and time again. Do you remember Ogden Nash, who was a popular, funny poet in the 50s?
Yes.
So this fits in here, and I like it a lot. His advice, to keep your marriage brimming with love in the loving cup, whenever you're wrong, admit it. Whenever you're right, shut up.
Shut up. I've used that in some of my speeches too, and it really is. It's so true. It's so true. And you've been to my firm's Valentine's Day parties. I mean, here we are divorce lawyers, and we go ahead and have a Valentine's Day party. This is probably a good way to end as we approach Valentine's Day.
Where we
mix, match, and mingle people that have been former clients and, mm-hmm. introduce around and, marriage counselors and, child counselors. There's an ability to learn, if you're smart, to learn from even the demise of a relationship and be a better person in your next one. So we do a pretty good recycling of people as through my office and trying to get people on their feet for their whatever comes next, rather than dwelling on it.
You sure do, Brad, and I love your Healing Hearts party. I'm hearing the music, so that means we must sign off. Thank you, Brad.
Don't forget
so much.
To tell them we're on April 26th again.
Yes. Yes, April 26th is when I'm having Brad back. So,
bye for
message
now.
To
Aloha,
all of
everybody.
You, everybody. Always choose love. Always choose love. Always choose love. Bye-bye.